meeting of the Portland City Council. Would you please call the roll?
Novit.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Dolphman.
Here.
Hale.
Here. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for your patience. We have a full council calendar this morning, beginning with a couple of communications items. I have one request to pull an item from the consent calendar so far, which is item 1216. Any others? Okay, so let's then move directly to communications items 1212.
1212, request of Terry Light to address council regarding policy on houselessness.
Terry, you here? Good morning.
Good morning, Council.
Good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to thank the Council for voting a few weeks ago to stop any new infrastructure for fossil fuels in Portland. I commend you on that. And also thank you for allowing the Hazelnut Grove to continue to exist here. This is my new home. And congratulations on your ability to be invited to Paris. I will see you there. I'm being invited to go there as well as Representative Righteous Rye. And at this moment in time here, as we're dealing with houselessness, I want to look and really commend to everyone this really important idea that everything has to change. We have a climate crisis. We have everything coming together as a crisis. And one of the biggest crises we have in our country is what individual people can do. And good luck to you figure out how to govern the shift that has to happen. We have to have a change of heart. We have to have a change of how we have our structures. Our structures are not working for us. We have a city council here. And I recognize your intent to protect the houselessness, to help people. And yet the police are still sweeping people. The steel bridge has been swept. We've seen several people come up to Hazelnut Grove saying they were sent here. The cops are saying they are going to come up and live there. We are already way over double capacity. So thank you for the porta potties. Thank you for the garbage help. This is really helpful. Our community is continuing to be really peaceful. We look forward to your visit. And I understand that you're a city council. You don't have, you know, you're supposed to have control over the police department. And I could see it doesn't necessarily be so. In my experience in organizations, you're a city council, and that's all you are. You have other entities that have their own things, and governing and security and make sure everything happens is difficult. And we'll recognize that. And that's because our structure is wrong. It's like you have to teach people to be a grown-up human beings and connected to the planet and connected to their hearts and knowing what's right from within, and have those people make those decisions from that place. Having power over does not work. As we see with this last thing, not everybody saw what happened to Barry Joe. He asked for an ambulance. He asked for a human being for assistance, and what he got was police in uniform. That's power over. That's saying he's going to be violent, so we have to prepare for that violence. So let's act like he's going to be violent, and then you're going to get violence back. If you treat people like animals, they're going to act like animals. You treat people like human beings who have free choice and the creativity and genius, which we do. Every child is born a genius. What the fuck happened to us all? We're acting really stupid, but it's our structures. It's a structure of fear. It's protection. It's a structure of we have to follow the rules instead of our hearts. And we had several teachers come over and over and over to our civilizations trying to teach us. St. Francis is a really powerful teacher. Jesus is a teacher. Muhammad's a teacher. But our hearts are the most important teacher. Do we have the courage to follow the heart? And that's what I have to ask everybody. There are the rules and our structures, but we as human beings have to take courage and treat each other and deal with our relationships to each other and our planet.
Thank you.
And our houseless folks are our neighbors. And everybody knows that, but we get all caught in our heads. Our black and yellow and indigenous neighbors, they're people and human beings. Not those labels.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much for coming today.
Terry, just one second. As a representative of Hazelnut Grove, I want you to know that about the water situation at Overlook Park. We were able to get it turned back on. However, it's going to freeze this weekend, so we're working on a strategy. Tim Crail, my chief of staff, is waiting outside. Would like to talk to you about that, to work with you on how we can provide services. My understanding, Mayor and Commissioner Saltzman, is that the warming shelters will also be open this week from tonight through Sunday. So we hope that people will be able to get inside, at least for the very cold weather.
And I also want to invite any human being who's listening to this that they have the option of opening up their doors and opening up their back doors or their backyards. You know, we as human beings have that choice. We just need to make it. We have the courage to make that. Reach out to another human being, treat them as a human being, and you'll get a humanness back.
We are definitely going to be looking at all kinds of new strategies. Thank you very much for your partnership.
Thank you. Okay, 1213, please.
1213, request of Krista Barron to address council regarding houseless issues.
Good morning. Come on up.
Hello and good morning, everyone. My name is Krista Barron. This is now the second time I've spoken before all of you. I'm from New York and I've lived in Portland before coming back in January. I'm here to talk about some issues like needing more showers and laundry facilities for the houseless. You know, there's tons of soap that I've received, but no water or place to bathe. Public bathhouses or bathtubs wouldn't be a bad idea. I feel we need these things because it would help to not spread diseases like head lice and, you know, like athlete's foot and body lice and other stuff. I feel that if anyone is in need, a desperate, smelly need, we should help them and not hurt them. I also, before I finish talking about these hygiene issues, wanted to say that this isn't the only state with these issues. It's all over. And where I live, there has been few showers and no public bathhouses. And few services that allows people to do laundry. The public needs a place to fulfill their hygiene requests without feeling cramped. Please create more showers. We really need that. Thank you, and thank you for listening to me again.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. Okay, let's move then to the consent calendar before we go to our time certain items. Again, just to pull 1216, if there are no others, and there are only two more. So let's vote on the balance of the consent calendar, please.
Novick.
Aye.
Ritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Baldwin.
Aye.
No. Aye. Okay, thank you. Now, item 1215.
1215, establish a tax on the demolition of certain residential structures in the city of Portland.
Okay, as staff comes up, let me just reset the context for this. This is continuing a council discussion that we started at a public hearing on October 14th. Obviously, we see a lot of growth in the city, a lot of positive change that comes with that growth, like jobs and parking lots getting redeveloped as mixed-use buildings, and fewer abandoned houses, though that's another issue that we need to take on. But I'm, like a lot of people in Portland, less happy with what's happening to our existing housing stock in neighborhoods and the demolition of great old houses being replaced by much larger, more expensive houses is a problem not just for one house at a time, but for the very character of our neighborhoods. The average difference between a house that was purchased and demolished and the house that replaced it is nearly $300,000. So this is not the provision of new affordable housing by any stretch. So our goal is to reduce the number of demolitions, to try to preserve more houses that are in repairable condition, and to generate funding, the first new funding for affordable home ownership that we will have created since the council made a commitment to do more in housing funding.
Mayor, can I just,
yes.
On that point, we have adopted an amendment saying the funds will go to the HIF without condition.
Okay. That's right. So that we hope that what will happen as a result of this tax is that we'll see a diminution in the number of demolitions and that we'll see new revenue flowing to that HIF fund, as Commissioner Fish just mentioned. So we have some invited testimony in panels here this morning, and we also have amendments. So I would suggest that in our usual way, we take up the amendments first and then invite our panels and then invite public testimony. So I have Jillian Detweiler from my office and Thomas Lanham from the Revenue Bureau here to walk us through the amendments that I want to propose, and I know there are others from the council. Jillian, is there anything I've left out in the bigger picture here?
Nope.
Okay. So let's move to amendments. Last month's hearing persuaded me that the tax would be less effective if it provides a rebate for increased density. So I'd like to eliminate that rebate. There are some other ideas I know that we'll discuss today in terms of changes, but I think in each case we should try to err towards simplicity, make this thing as simple and understandable as possible. There are some other possible amendments that we should think about, extending the effective date to allow Thomas time to develop administrative rules, think about owner-occupied houses. I know Commissioner Fish has some interest in dealing with the question of houses that are being demolished in the floodplain by our own bureau because they're in the floodplain. So let's take up each of those issues in turn and talk first about the amendments, which I think we have in front of you. If we don't, we'll get you copies. First, to eliminate the density rebate, and then secondly, to change the effective date. So I would propose those amendments, amending 6.08.055.
Mayor, do we have copies of the amendments?
Do we have those, Jillian, and for everyone?
I gave copies to
okay.
Sue.
So let's make sure Sue distributes those. Okay.
No.
There's one.
That's just the one that we just amended, but that one.
We'll just take a moment to get this ready.
Okay.
You have a complete set?
Oh,
Sam?
Yeah, I've got one.
No, we just have the one. We don't have the others.
I can make copies if you want. These will be the new amendments, not in the packet.
Right, so this first thing this morning, I brought 10 copies of the amendment that Mayor Hales is referring to that would eliminate the density rebate.
So I then,
prior to the hearing, I brought an amendment that would change the effective date to allow sufficient time to develop administrative rules.
I don't have either of those.
We don't have those.
What is the new effect, or what is the proposed
effective
date?
So the proposed effective date is March 1st. And that that the tax would apply to any demolition not applied for before February 29th.
Wouldn't that encourage a spate of demolitions?
One way or another, if there's an effective date at all, there's probably going to be some demolitions filed just before the effective date. So I think that's a reality, no matter where we set the date.
I wonder if there's a way to do it as in, well, never mind.
Got it. Okay, so give people a chance to look at those.
Sure.
And again, I would move the amendment to 6.08.055, the demolition tax rebate section, to remove the paragraph that says the Portland Bureau of Development Services shall develop guidelines for persons to apply for and obtain rebates of up to $25,000 for subsequent housing development that increases the number of units. Remember, this tax only applies in single-family zones. So if somebody's tearing down an existing home in an R1 zone, there we go.
Actually, that's the amended amendment.
That's the amended. I think it's still the same.
No, it's not.
What's different?
Oh, okay, yeah.
As we had a little time before council, we don't want in code that the Bureau is going to develop the guidelines. The code should say that there are guidelines and that we're going to allow the rebate. So it's just a
Up above. Okay, yes. In the paragraph up above. Okay, so now that section would read, subsequent housing development following demolition that qualifies as affordable housing as determined by the Portland Housing Bureau, applying the criteria established in section 30.01.095, may apply for and obtain rebates of up to $25,000, subject to guidelines developed by the Portland Housing Bureau. So that's the affordable housing rebate that remains, but the rebate for tearing down one house and building two would go away if we approve this amendment. Got that right?
So I guess I'm now confused.
No, this is just the affordable housing one. There should be a second amendment that would
help me out here, Jillian.
Take out the
so.
Well, Mayor, I also have a proposed amendment.
Well, I'm going to second that one first. Just
right.
Yeah, I mean, that's the crossed out language. Is
how many amendments does the mayor have? We'll do his package first.
Two.
And two? All right, let's call that the mayor's package A.
Oh, I see. That's
and
two.
And what are those two amendments?
The one I just described, which removes the provision that provides a rebate if you tear down one house and build two, and the amendment that changes the effective date from January 16th to March 1st, and the filing date by which someone must have filed a demolition permit prior to the imposition of the tax, moving that from January 15th to February 29th.
So I'm just marking this. The first one, it has to do with the demolition tax rebate. So we'll call that Mayor 1.
Yep.
And the second has to do with the effective dates, and we'll call that Mayor 2.
Works for me. So I'd move those two amendments.
Second.
And just a clarification. This isn't the language. Well, what your staff and I worked on during the break wasn't to amend this bit, so I'm wondering, is it...
Let's take that up as a second.
Right. No, it's a question about this. Is it the Bureau of Housing who's going to develop the guidelines or the Bureau of Development Services?
The amendment that Commissioner Fish is calling Mayor 1 doesn't touch that first paragraph.
Right.
I think Commissioner Fish is suggesting we treat that as a third or as a separate amendment to amend the language regarding a rebate for affordable housing.
All right.
Yeah. So, Mayor, why don't I offer Fish 1?
Okay.
We have Mayor 1, Mayor 2. Let's do Fish 1, which is the BES exemption. Amend Section 6.08.050A. to include a new subsection 3 as follows. Properties purchased by the city for restoration purposes that are in the floodplain or in the reasonable estimation of the director of the Bureau of Environmental Services are at risk of future flooding.
I'll second that. Just want to make sure I understand the way that one would work, just reading the language. So in both cases, these are properties that have been purchased by the city. They're either in the floodplain or they are at risk, right? But in all cases, they're owned by BES.
That's correct. Pursuant to a willing seller program for the purpose of removing the structure and doing floodplain restoration.
Right.
So there is no replacement home, and therefore, in our view, no reason to trigger the $25,000 fee.
Right. I get it. Okay. Now, Commissioner Fritz, I think you wanted to also amend another amendment.
I think there may be up to three competing amendments on the affordable housing exemption.
Okay.
I think Commissioner Novick has one, maybe Commissioner Fritz, and I have one too. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get them before
this
us.
Complicated, is it?
Let's get them in front of us so we can understand the difference between them. So again, the one that I've moved and Commissioner Fish seconded as Mayor 1 simply removes the exemption for taking down one house and building more than one house in a single family zone. The second one changes the effective date. The third one, Fish 1, provides for an exemption for the Bureau of Environmental Services for houses that the Bureau has purchased. Or that the city has purchased for purposes of floodplain mitigation. So we've got that one as those three are on the table. What's next?
I've got two amendments, Mayor. Amendment 1 would establish a tiered structure for the demolition tax in effect related to the price of the replacement structure. I think that what we've heard the most complaints about are somebody tears down a house that's compatible with the existing neighborhood and builds a million-dollar McMansion instead. But that having a flat $25,000 tax that relates to any demolition means that if somebody's tearing down the dumpiest house within three blocks and replacing it with a $350,000 house that's the same as all the other houses in the neighborhood, the same tax will be paid as if somebody's knocking down a $400,000 house and building a million-dollar house. So my suggestion is that if the sales price of the replacement structure is equal to or less than 100% of the median Portland sales price, so in other words, they're not contributing to any more unaffordability than the market, the rebate would be 100% of the tax. If the sales price of the replacement structure is more than 100% of this median Portland sales price and equal to or less than 125%, the rebate is 75% of the tax. If the sales price of the replacement residential structure is more than 125% of median Portland sales price and less than 150%, the rebate is 50% of the tax. So in other words, if the sales price of the replacement structure was more than 150% of the median sales price, then the whole $25,000 would be paid and there'd be no rebate.
Steve, I'll second it for purpose of discussion, and I have a question. So how does this prevent a scenario where an insider purchases the home to trigger the rebate and then places it on the market and sells it at the fair market price?
An insider, okay, explain to me how that would work.
Family member, friend.
The developer, I mean, someone does a proxy purchase to get the rebate and then a week later determines that the house wants to put the market on the house. So sells it at below market value to a proxy person to get the rebate and then puts it on at whatever the full market is.
Well, my understanding is that there's for the existing Portland Housing Bureau Affordable Housing SDC waiver, that I mean, my staff asked yesterday whether there's any guard against that sort of insider dealing for the SDC waiver, and we were told no, that the Housing Bureau hasn't considered that a big enough problem to try to come up with some way to avoid it.
That's because we have a robust system of oversight annually to make sure people have we have mechanisms for doing oversight and covenants, including depending on the program, either a 10 or 60 year covenant, which is actually baked into the deed.
And it's just multifamily, right? It's not for
SDC waiver. There's a single family.
There is a single family.
SDC
there's
waiver.
A home ownership limited tax exemption also. Pulte.
But there's significant restrictions that apply and significant oversight.
I'd certainly be open to suggestions as to how to have some prophylactic measures.
I like this in theory. I'm concerned about administrative ability. I guess I'm also concerned legally that we may be in a more vulnerable place if it's based on the price, sales price of the house than if it's a flat tax. But I'll wait for the city attorney to opine on that.
I mean, one thing I want to say about this is that if what we're trying to do is deter demolitions, then having a $25,000 tax is more likely to deter a scenario where you pull down a $200,000 house and replace it with a $350,000 one than one where somebody is planning to sell the replacement house for $1 million.
Because absolutely. That's why I like the idea in theory. And from the beginning, we hoped to have this be more graduated than flat, but veered towards a simpler approach.
Doesn't this – I'm just thinking out loud here, but – because I very much appreciate the spirit of your amendment, but doesn't it work better when we're dealing with nonprofit providers who are in the business of building long-term affordability into single family, so either through a land trust model or something else, and then we have the existing mechanisms, and doesn't it work less effectively in the private market?
That may be true, but my concern is the fairness and sense of the overall tax. And I think that if you're saying that you're going to have a $25,000 tax that applies to any demolition, no matter who is what the structure is being replaced by or what the price is, I think that's a serious problem. I mean, we need to remember that there are three parties to any transaction which involves somebody selling a house to a developer, the developer knocking it down, and somebody else buying it. You've got Helen Homeowner, Dastardly Developer, and Bobby Buyer. And if Helen Homeowner is living as the dumpiest house in an up-and-coming neighborhood and wants to cash in and make some money for her retirement, And it's not too much cashing in because the replacement house is only going to be $400,000. I am worried about applying a $25,000 tax that will affect both Helen homeowner and Bobby buyer, who is somebody who's buying a $400,000 house rather than $1 million house. I think that it tends to be an assumption that dastardly developer bears all of the tax, but I think that in fact, the impact of the tax will be shared by Helen homeowner, dastardly developer, and Bobby buyer. And I'm much more concerned about the impact at the lower end of the scale than the higher end of the scale.
And isn't it also the case, Commissioner, that if Helen, home buyer, homeowner, decides to spruce up the house so she has a long-term asset, we actually think of that differently than if she's selling it?
Yeah, but Helen, homeowner, might not have the money to spruce up the house.
So, Mayor, I guess...
I have an amendment on that one.
Well, let's continue with discussion of this one. I want to ask some
questions. Yeah, I mean, I think both Commissioner Fritz and myself have amendments that are all related to the same topic, and I don't think we need more than one of these versions to emerge.
Okay, well, let's get the other ones on the table, and then I'd like to ask Julian and Thomas to comment on them.
Actually, Mayor, can I just put my second amendment on the table, which would be Novick Amendment 2, which would say the Revenue Division shall study and report to Council by June 2016 about options for administering and enforcing an exemption to the tax for existing owners who plan to occupy the new house for at least 3 to 5 additional years. And the reason we're asking the Revenue Division to study this is that Mr. Lanham has said that this is a concept that should be explored and we shouldn't run it out there without sort of our due diligence. I think that, again, people are much less concerned about an existing homeowner tearing down their own home and rebuilding it. I mean, what we hear about is the original homeowners would have been horrified at this monstrosity that was built when they sold the home. I think that there is less of a concern about an existing homeowner doing a demolition and then living in a house, putting a house they'll have to live in themselves. So I'd like to explore this concept of an existing homeowner exemption, but given Mr. Lanham's warning that it's a complicated issue, I'd rather address it now simply by asking them to study it.
Is there a second? Somebody second that?
A second.
Okay.
I have a simpler amendment.
All right. We've got that one on the table. Now let's hear yours. And then we'll...
We can go to Commissioner Salzman's.
Okay. Dan, you ready?
Yeah. So my amendment is, I think we're all operating in the same spirit here, and that is an exemption for affordable housing. And what I'm proposing is that we simply follow the guidelines the Housing Bureau already sets for the Home Ownership Limited Tax Exemption Program, where we determine every year, or the council determines every year, a price, a sales cap price, in order to qualify, that a home must sell for, or less, in order to qualify for SDC waivers and property tax exemption for the purchaser. And so it simply ties the rebate to that sales price cap that council sets annually. Right now, currently, the sales cap is $291,000.
All right, so I'm going to second this. And, Dan, I have a question. A question has come up in some correspondence we've all received about whether this should be structured as a rebate or a waiver. And, obviously, the difference is primarily whether the purchaser, nonprofit, let's say, would have to finance the rebate. I mean, excuse me, the demolition fee in anticipation of getting it back. What are the arguments on either side of that? Structuring it as a rebate versus a waiver.
Well, I've simply been operating under the paradigm that we're talking about, which is the concept of a rebate. I mean, the point you make about a waiver versus a rebate is a good point.
Well, we've heard.
I think it applies to everything we're talking about here, though.
We've had some folks in the affordable housing community just argue that a waiver is cleaner, and they have a track, particularly when it's a Habitat or a Proud Ground or someone that we know has a track record of doing this kind of housing. If you do it as a rebate, they have to finance the cost up front and then apply for the rebate. So is there any reason administratively we wouldn't just make it a waiver versus a rebate?
Yes, there is. Thomas Lanham with the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services. So the issue there is that an event would need to occur subsequent to the assessment date of the tax, and we don't really and truly know that the triggering event has occurred until after the fact. So putting the exemption at the front end is a little more difficult administratively. I'm not quite sure I would do that. I would also add I haven't actually seen the language of your amendment, Commissioner, so I'm not.
Well, could we delay the collection of the tax until the closing, so it has the effect of being a waiver.
Commissioner Jillian Detweiler, Mayor's Office, I think that is possible, and I think that's something that could be worked out with administrative rules. Shannon Callahan on Commissioner Saltzman's staff indicated one of her objectives in referencing the HALTI program is that it is a program that affordable housing developers apply for prior to actually developing and starting construction. So we would have those commitments in place quite early in the development process, and it would at least, I think, give us the opportunity to shorten a period where the $25,000 might have to be carried. And I'd like to find a mechanism that treats it as a lien or some other way suspends, you know, an actual cash payment where we have that affordable housing commitment.
So is your preference? We haven't seen Commissioner Fritz's amendment, so I want to
let's get that on the table.
And
get a little larger review of this.
And actually, Commissioner Saltzman, a friendly amendment to yours, which is the rewording that was suggested in Mayor Number 2. This Section 608055 is actually the code. So a statement such as the Portland Bureau of Housing shall develop guidelines is more what goes in the ordinance rather than in the code. So Mayor 2 reorganizes the code and says what the rules will be from now on. So your amendment needs to be incorporated into Mayor 2.
Okay.
So that's just a...
Okay. Right. So I'd like to offer a friendly amendment to Dan's, to Saltzman 1, because it sounds to me like it's six of one, half dozen of the other, and we have to work this out between now and when we finalize.
Actually, I wasn't quite done.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you. It says that they're going to develop guidelines, so I don't know that we actually need to set exactly in stone what those guidelines are as part of the code writing exercise.
Well, it says they can to obtain a rebate, and I'd like to actually clarify that the guidelines they'll develop have to do with a waiver and not a rebate.
And I would just add the language we're using in Exhibit A is actually not a rebate, but not a waiver, but an exemption. That would be the exemption chapter.
So I'd like to make a friendly amendment.
So instead of, wait a second, that should read exemption in the third line of that, then, rather than waiver, rather than rebate.
Rather than rebate.
Right? Okay.
Just to be consistent.
Yes. Okay. If in the course of administrative rulemaking you come back and say there's some other reason why we can't do it, let's take that up, but let's state it as the council's intent.
Okay.
Is my friendly amendment accepted?
Yes, I think so.
Yes.
Dan, is that okay with you?
Yes.
All right. And Commissioner
Thank
Fritz,
you. And I'm sorry I don't have this written down because there was a miscommunication between the mayor and myself as to who was proposing this amendment. But it's an amendment to 608050 exemptions, and it would add to A, the demolition tax shall not apply to. We would add number 3, demolition permits where the applicant is the homeowner as of March 1st, 2016, assuming that we change the effective date. So what this does, instead of Commissioner Novick's amendment that they have to promise to live there for 3 to 5 years, it just says for people who currently own their property and own their property as of March 1st, if they themselves, not the person they sell it to or the developer, but if that homeowner wants to apply to demolish their home and build a new one, then they get to do that without having the tax apply.
Second.
Right. No, that's a separate issue, and I agree with it. I think that wasn't processed into that other amendment because it's a discrete issue,
right.
But I agree with that.
Is that labeled Fritz 1?
Fritz only, yes.
Well, I guess my question would be, given Mr. Lanham worked with Commissioner Novick on saying we need to study that issue because there could be, I don't know, machinations that we don't desire to occur. I guess I'm curious to know what your comments are on Commissioner Fritz's proposal.
Well, the problem with that is then if they're going to do a study, there isn't then the exemption as of March 2nd. So a homeowner, like we did hear from two homeowners, I think came into the hearing saying that they were planning to do this, you know, basically renovate, completely demolish and start over on their property. They wouldn't get to do that until we've done the study.
Thomas might want to address it. It's it is simpler to know when somebody owned a home versus trying to document whether or not they both intend to and actually do live in a home for, you know, 5 years into the future. I think that's
okay.
It's a simpler matter to document when that home was acquired by the person who is applying for the demolition.
It may
permit.
Be simpler. It also is not inconsistent. I mean, I don't see why current homeowners are entitled to consideration that future homeowners are not. So we could adopt Commissioner Fritz's amendment and also adopt mine.
So I'm going to suggest, actually, that we take testimony and then later act on our amendments, since we've got some disparate views of the – but we know what the issues are. The issues are, should the tax apply to situations in which somebody's tearing down one house and build two? Second is, what should the effective date be in order for it to be a successful rollout and operation of the Bureau? Third is, should we exempt – houses that are the city's purchasing because they're in the floodplain. Fourth is, how do we deal with existing owners? Well, maybe I'm not fourth, but and then what about reflecting affordability in the amount of the tax or the amount of the rebate, which we have a couple of different ways to go. I think I've captured the issues, so I think it would be useful to have both our staff reflect on the amendments that we have in front of them, maybe come back at the end of the public testimony, and two, hear from people that are here to speak on, do they think we should approve some version of these amendments, and then we can return to a little bit of a work session and act on those amendments at the end of the hearing. That sound good?
Yes, and I've reorganized the three amendments on section
the unified field
608.
Theory. All right.
055.
So why don't you hold that all language right. Until the end? So we've got these conceptually in front of us. Any front-end comments about that now, Thomas?
I'm comfortable with all the amendments except two. Novick 1, I've got some concerns about administrability that have already been covered. And the other one, I just want to make sure I'm clear, Commissioner Saltzman, I've got your language here, as amended by Commissioner Fish, you would basically go in there and then insert, instead of rebates, exemptions.
Correct.
Okay, and I'll confer with a little bit on the sideline here on that question.
It assumes you otherwise meet all the requirements of the HLTE program.
Right. I just need to piece together how we might structure that as an administrative rule.
Okay.
Before the two of you leave, I know there were some questions about the roles of the Revenue Bureau or the Revenue Division. Versus the Bureau of Development Services and setting rules. Do we have that all? Is that clear in our minds? Who's responsible?
It's clear to me. I wasn't aware there was any question.
Okay. Yeah, similarly, I'd heard third hand there was a concern, but I have not heard that concern from the parties who intend to administer.
Dan, we've agreed that if there's a conflict, the Water Bureau will break the tie. They all felt that work made a lot of sense.
Okay.
Mayor, up and get my and proposed Jillian? Consolidation, see if it works.
A question about the density issue. Are we going to hear from anyone at Planning and Sustainability about the impact of the deletion of the density exemption?
There's Planning and Sustainability Bureau staff here, so we can do that as needed at the end.
Okay.
Okay, so I have a couple invited panels, and then we have some people signed up to testify. So let's hear from our two panels. The first one is Alyssa Kruger, Al Ellis, and Steve Elder, and Margaret Davis. So bring up another chair if all four of you are here from United Neighborhoods for Reform. Good morning. And that giant microphone box does slide around, so if you need to get closer to the microphone, slide it towards your colleague. Or, okay, Sue's providing us. Good morning. Who'd like to start?
I'll start. So I want to read something, but I also do have something to say to your thing about the replacing the $200,000 home with the $400,000 home. Most developers use a three-times formula. So in order to build a $400,000 house, the home they would have to purchase would have to be priced at about $125,000 to $130,000. There are no homes in Portland that are $125,000 to $130,000. So that's just not going to happen. There just isn't a profit margin on the private market. So I just wanted to point that out, that you can't buy vacant land in the central city for that price. So that just by nature of what is available on the market, that just isn't going to happen. So just wanted to point that out. So my name is Alyssa Eisenstein Kruger, and I'm a real estate broker in Portland, and I represent many first-time home buyers in Portland, and I am pleading with you to do something to curb the wanton destruction of our viable vintage housing stock. We are losing our starter homes to the greed of builders who see dollar signs. If builders, developers are going to make profits at the expense of our citizens' access to affordable home ownership opportunities, then they need to pay into a fund to help offset that cost. Demolition tax isn't perfect, but it's something. The most affordable home is the one that is already standing, and once these homes are demolished, they are gone forever, taken out of service forevermore. By charging developers $25,000 for each home they demolish for the purpose of helping fund affordable housing efforts, this at least creates a revenue source to help families stay in Portland who are otherwise being priced out from both rental housing and home ownership, and addresses the cost of the loss of affordable housing to our rapidly changing community. Housing prices over the last year in Portland have risen the third fastest in the entire country, right behind Denver and San Francisco. The latest Case-Shiller Housing Price Index shows that Portland metro home prices increased on average of over 10.1% from September 2014 to September 2015. Looking at data for our closer-in neighborhoods, this increase is probably 15% or more. At the same time, wages have remained stagnant and rents have increased in the double digits over the last year as well, which means potential first-time homebuyers who are renting are having an even harder time saving for a down payment. With no affordable homes to buy and rents out of reach, where are these families supposed to live? Revenues generated from the demolition tax could help the families with a down payment or rental assistance so they can continue to live in their neighborhoods. And it isn't just small starter homes that are being demolished. The home at 3416 Northeast Alameda was a gorgeous Tudor that was well-maintained and had gardens featured in Sunset Magazine. It was on a double lot, and in May of 2015, Everett Custom Homes purchased this home for $815,000 cash, $36,000 over the list price of $779,000. The home was recently demolished, and the lot was split into two lots. Last Wednesday, Everett put the two now vacant lots up for sale at a list price of $500,000 each. Perhaps if there had been a demolition tax in place, that home would still be standing. In the Hayhurst neighborhood, 3015 Southwest Idaho was a 1949 ranch-style home that Everett purchased in March for $210,000. They demolished the home with the plan to subdivide the property. Last Wednesday, Everett put that lot up for sale for $500,000. And last but not least, 7850 Southwest 30th Avenue was a 1941-built home near Multnomah Village that Everett purchased for cash for $398,500 in May. Last week, they listed that empty lot for $400,000. Had there been a demolition tax, then perhaps these homes would still be standing. So the demolition tax would also hopefully serve as a deterrent for land speculation, which clearly this is. Everett Homes and other home developers are demolishing homes as fast as they can to get to the land underneath.
Thank you.
Do you really think that if they're making $100,000 on demolishing and then selling it off again within a few months, why would $25,000 make a difference to them?
Perhaps they wouldn't have demolished it in the first place. They're clearly not making a profit on these things. They went in there, probably got overextended. Nobody really knows why, but had there been another $25,000 added to the cost, perhaps it would have saved the homes, knowing that there would not be a profit.
Morning.
My name's Al Ellis. I'm a Beaumont, Wilshire resident and co-founder of United Forum, UNR.
And all four of us are on the steering committee of UNR. I want to thank the mayor for inviting us to give testimony this morning. The three main objectives of UNR's demolition development resolution, which is endorsed by nearly half of the city's neighborhood associations, closely mirror three of Mayor Hale's stated objectives for neighborhoods in his State of the City speech last January. One, preserve neighborhood character. Two, facilitate affordability. And three, reduce the number of residential demolitions. UNR believes the proposed ordinance to impose a $25,000 tax on demolition of single-family homes and single-family residential zones, subject to the amendments that you're going to be considering, is consistent with the aforementioned objectives and warrants your support. The recent Oregonian staff editorial characterizing this proposal as a NIMBY tax couldn't be further from the truth. NIMBY stands for Not in My Backyard, the implication being that residents who applaud the mayor's initiative are somehow only interested in preventing demolitions on their own blocks, but could care less if demolitions take place elsewhere in the city. Clearly, the goal of this tax is to discourage destruction of viable homes throughout the city, in every residential neighborhood, and in accordance with Mayor Hale's amendment, number one, not to reward developers who would destroy existing homes affordable to average buyers for the purpose of profiting from construction of million-dollar replacement dwellings under the guise of increased density. The Oregonian editorial also cites aesthetic objections of neighbors as a primary justification for this tax. While the building of a house that is three times the size of the house demolished certainly runs counter to the comprehensive plan's stated objective of preserving neighborhood character, the primary target of this disincentive tax is not the size of the replacement houses, but to preserve the existing houses. And where the tax is not successful in deterring demolition, the tax revenue will be used to help fund affordable housing programs, which is only fair since every demolition is, in effect, a cost to the neighborhood in terms of livability and health. In conclusion, this is more than just a vote to impose a tax. It's an opportunity to send the message that willy-nilly demolitions in our neighborhoods for the purpose of building million-dollar replacement homes with little or no regard to existing residences or the need for affordable housing is not what Portland is all about. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. Who'd like to go next?
Good morning. My name is Steve Elder, and I'm here to speak on behalf of the mayor's suggested ordinance and the mayor's amendments to it. I live in Northeast Portland, where I immigrated some 3 years ago from my native Texas. Since I have lived in Portland, I have been designated by TriMet, the transportation company, as an honored citizen. This entitles me to half-price bus tickets. It's a good thing. I have also been designated by the Oregonian as a NIMBY, who would impose my own art aesthetic sensibilities upon some poor developers who are just out to try to make a buck. I plead guilty as charged. In preparation for this presentation, I came upon a newspaper account from the year 2000 in which then City Councilman Charlie Hales said, "You can still build an ugly house in Portland, but we're going to make it hard for you." The issue then, as you may know, was the snout houses, which are bungalows with two-car garages where the front yard usually goes and no discernible front door. A leading developer said that Charlie was our former lobbyist and he is a traitor to his cause. We're all becoming a bunch of socialists. And it passed. And as from my research, it passed primarily for aesthetic reasons. And right now, the city is talking about the issue of demolishing houses and replacing them with, or refilling their lots with excrescences that blot out the sky. And I'm saying there is aesthetic justification for disallowing such a thing, but you don't need to stop there. Just listen to what all of my other neighbors are talking about asbestos, about affordability, about lead, about tearing down, all of this gamut of things that are on the table. So what the commission is looking at now is quality of life, is desirability of being in Portland. And that's why, as I said, I submit that the council should adopt the ordinance as amended, and I would point out a couple of things that, and I would ask that the commission not weigh the ordinance down with obfuscatory amendments and technicalities which would make it very difficult to enforce. And in suggestion to the notion of possibly escalating or varying the amount of the pinprick of the tax regarding how much it's going to be replacing, I'd say if the council is going to consider such things, then if the council would consider escalating the bite of the tax to want to maybe raise it a little bit more. In other words, escalate it both ways. Consider escalating it both ways. And in view of the of my neighbor Ms. Eisenstein Kruger's suggestion that people are tearing down houses and putting the lots up, you know, is being real estate speculators, I say, good. We have them on the line.
Thank you
Sir,
very much.
Sir, what would you think about limiting the tax to instances where the demolition is demonstrated to have been, in fact, willy-nilly, and the replacement house and the replacement house is adjudged to be an excrescence?
Good work.
The first time those have been defined in law. Thank you very much. Good morning, Margaret.
Good morning. I'm Margaret Davis. I live in Northeast Portland, and I work with United Neighborhoods for Reform, or UNR. UNR, whose work is endorsed by 43 neighborhood associations, supports the demolition tax as a way to maintain and fund viable, affordable housing while also better distributing the costs of trash and build development. The loss of housing is real, exacerbated by developers now eliminating homes to merely put the lots on the market, this during a declared housing emergency. Whatever happens with the tax, we need to do much more. Because of severe public danger related to the release of asbestos and lead dust during demolitions, UNR proposes a temporary demolition moratorium until the city can craft rules on abatement, comply with the new state law on asbestos, and effectively protect the public from exposure to hazardous materials. At meetings of city staff and federal agency personnel, we have seen with dismay how slow and difficult it will be to manage uncontrolled hazmat during demolitions. Let's give them the needed time and the incentive to safeguard people and the environment. Maybe even go up to Vancouver, Washington, or any other city there and see how they do it. In September, Oregonian reporter Fedor Zarkin looked into the release of hazmat during mechanical demolition in a multi-part series. He found huge gaps in oversight of demolitions that allow lead and asbestos to be visited upon unsuspecting neighbors and surrounding properties. Think about the kids who live near a demolition and play on the swing set, then eat a snack afterwards without washing their hands, thereby ingesting small particles of lead that the Centers for Disease Control says has no safe limit in children. Imagine the asbestos fibers embedding themselves into people's lungs, later to bloom into serious illness. Demolitions occur almost daily, and the exposure is exponential. Have you consulted legal counsel as to the city's culpability when all these serious illnesses present themselves? After the Oregonian stories and our visits here, you can't say you didn't know. A moratorium sounds like scary stuff, but it needn't be. The law's on your side. Under the Portland City Charter, a key responsibility of city government is to ensure public safety. And I have a citation here in your handout. A demolition moratorium is legally defensible and morally responsible. One grounds for a moratorium, according to state law, is that it demonstrate a compelling need, including prevention of irrevocable public harm from development. It has been hard enough watching our great neighborhoods that we created plundered and turned into profit centers for short-term investors. It has been unconscionable to watch our neighborhoods turn into poison centers where we cannot eat what we grow, breathe deeply, or play safely. As you consider demolitions and their irreversible effects and a moratorium, we urge you to be brave, be responsible, be our leaders. Thank you for your service to your constituents. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you all very much. Thanks for coming. Okay, we have a second panel. Ruth Atkins from the Welcome Home Coalition, Tim Pitts from Think Real Estate, and Fred Leeson from the Architectural Heritage Center. Good morning. Ruth, just push the button on the base of that microphone, and away you go. There you are.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Ruth Adkins. I'm here today representing the Welcome Home Coalition, which is an organization of 115 area organizations working to increase dedicated funding in the Portland metro region to build, preserve, and support affordable housing. And we're here to strongly support the proposed demolition tax. Obviously, this new tax alone cannot fix our affordable housing crisis, but it is one more tool in our toolbox of revenue and policy solutions toward an equitable Portland where everyone can find a place to call home. As you know, Portland still needs an additional $50 million annually to build back the missing 25,000 affordable homes. But this proposed tax will be our first permanent and dedicated revenue stream for Portland's Housing Investment Fund, or HIF, so that's very exciting. We support the mayor's proposal to include all demolition single-family homes, including lots where additional density is planned. To exempt more than 60% of demolition would significantly reduce the revenue and the community benefit of the policy without creating any new affordability. Each demolition of a non-condemned home that is replaced by a market-rate housing represents a lost affordable homeownership starter home opportunity, even when density is added. And of course, in this context, density does not mean a large multifamily apartment building, but it's we really feel like this helps level the playing field for those first-time home buyers. So we do agree that the tax should apply to all demolitions and single-family homes. If I may comment in regard to some of the many amendments that are on the table, obviously we strongly support the exemption for nonprofit housing. Really appreciate that being put forward, and we're sure that our city staff can capably work through the complexities of figuring out how to make that work, but we really appreciate the intent to not add to the already high costs of providing affordable housing. We need to reduce those costs wherever possible in that burden. So appreciate and hope that you will approve that amendment to exempt nonprofit housing and potentially, of course, privately developed housing that includes affordable units. In terms of the start date, we are in a housing emergency, recognizing that there needs to be a balance when new policies come in, but the concern would be that folks would do a rush and capitalize before the extended deadline. So from my perspective, it should be a moratorium because of the emergency on demolitions until we can get the rules worked out and get this in place. In terms of the current homeowner piece, certainly appreciate that there may be some homeowners who would be planning to demolish their homes, but I think for me and for the coalition, the larger concern is really that speculation by developers. That's the bigger concern that this policy would address, and I don't know what would stop a homeowner from taking advantage of their exemption and then turning around and selling it to a dastardly developer. So additionally, we would love it if the language were clarified so that it were per unit, not per building lot. In other words, if a fourplex is torn down, the developer should be charged for the loss of four homes, not one. Especially since those smaller multiplexes are really one of our few remaining affordable options in Portland. And we also would love it if the currently existing loophole for partial demolition, where you tear down almost but not entirely the whole building, if there's a way to close that loophole, that would be even better policy. So on the whole, we're very happy to support this new policy and really appreciate your leadership to seek new dedicated revenue streams to permanently close the gap on our affordable housing shortfall. It's a great first step for the Housing Investment Fund and a good step forward for housing equity in Portland. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ruth.
So question of clarification, does this tax apply to multifamily dwellings?
I don't believe so in its current form. Julian might be able to help with that.
Yeah, just in terms of the density goals, this doesn't apply to that. So I think that's why we're okay with it.
Well, it's an interesting question that I want to talk about some more later because one of our problems, of course, is demolition of larger multifamily structures that could be preserved and continue to be affordable. So that's an interesting concept.
Yeah, good point. We'll get staff to respond to that, too. Thank you.
Ms. Atkins, on the subject of needing other tools, there's just one potential tool that doesn't exist yet I'd like to run by you. We now have a state, I think it's a constitutional amendment that prohibits any real estate transfer taxes. Last year in Portland, about 2,000 houses were sold for over $500,000. So even if you only applied a 2% real estate transfer tax to those houses, you'd raise $20 million. I've asked some legislators if they'd be willing to send something to the voters saying, would you be okay with real estate transfer taxes and only apply to homes that sell for over $500,000? So I'm curious if you'd join me in furthering that suggestion.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you turn your microphone off, please? Thanks.